Welcome to the Freedom Formula for Physicians podcast, where it's all about slashing your debt and taxes and creating a liberated lifestyle. And now, your host, with a love of fantasy books and funk, and a hatred of running more than 3 miles, Dave Denniston.
My name is Dave Denniston, and welcome back to the latest episode of the Freedom Formula for Physicians podcast. Well, are you in a place where you felt frustrated? You're stuck in your practice. Are you concerned about the next productivity bonus? Or are you wondering, what are you going to do in this era of declining reimbursements? Let me tell you, you are not alone. Nearly every physician I speak with, they're biting their nails. They're wondering, what is the future going to hold? And have you been wondering, how can you increase your revenue? Our next guest, he is a sharp cookie. Most recently, he's owned Hurricane Marketing Enterprises. He's worked really diligently on systems and automation and speaking. He became a student to process and messaging, and as a matter of fact, his business has grown astronomically since. Besides being a business owner, he's also an incredibly powerful speaker, and he has an extremely popular YouTube channel. Please help me welcome my friend Steve, the Hurricane Weiss, the founder of Hurricane Marketing Enterprises. Welcome, Steve.
Thank you so much, Dave. It's a pleasure to be here. Hi, everybody.
Hey, man, let's kick this off. Tell us a bit about you. Where'd you grow up?
Well, I am a New Jersey native, so anybody, you hear some negative things about New Jersey, don't believe it, okay? We're hardworking people, we're very tenacious, and we're very passionate individuals. So I'm originally from Bayonne, New Jersey, and I've lived here all my life, and I basically harbor everything about the New Jersey mind flow of dedication, hard work, and perseverance. We can overcome anything. You get knocked down, you get back up, you get on a horse, and you continue forward. And that's kind of what led me to be here today as a successful entrepreneur at 35 years old.
Didn't take any mess, right? You just keep on charging forward.
Exactly. Got to do what we got to do to survive, right?
That's it. Well, I mentioned in the intro, you're a business owner, and you've owned a number of different businesses over the years. So I want you to take us back to a moment where maybe you were struggling and wondering if you were going to make it.
Mm-hmm. There were two examples. The first one I'll give you was from my home care business that I had back in 2005, and I actually wasn't the owner of the company yet. It was a situation where I had come in, I had was the new director of business development for this home care company. I was not from the healthcare industry, so I did not know any of the language or lingo. For example, ADLs, a very common acronym, Activities of Daily Living, everybody knows what that stands for. For me, I actually thought that was Lou Gehrig's disease for the first 6 months on the job. So It wasn't until one day I looked like a fool and I thought it was Lou Gehrig's disease, and that's when a therapist told me that that was ALS and ADL, is Activities of Daily Living. So it was a very challenging time for me to really get into the healthcare network on the sales and marketing side. But the positive that I took from it is I've always had sales and marketing positions, and so I was able to really piece together, well, who is my target customer? Somebody who has a need, somebody who's elderly, and somebody who can financially afford services. And so I was able to put together, just through my knowledge of sales and marketing, how to find that target customer, where do they exist, and then develop a plan to go out and get those customers to come to me as referrals for business. And so as a result, from 2005 to 2009, we took this small company that was doing about $600,000 or so a year to over $5 million annually, and I became one of the part owners, vice president of Care Choice in 2009 at 28 years old. And so that's kind of like it was a dark story, but we got through that. And then obviously the next one was when I started Hurricane Marketing Enterprises, where I helped these post-acute care providers grow their census, their revenues, and their profits. And in the beginning, you start putting out videos on YouTube, and it's just a process. So right now, like you said, extremely popular YouTube channel, yes, there's now 200-plus videos on our YouTube channel. People find this all the time. A lot of people don't realize this when it comes to YouTube. Google owns YouTube. So 90% of the YouTube, of the Google searches that people do, because everybody Googles things to find what they're looking for, videos come up more and more frequently on 90% of those searches, because people will be like, well, do I want to read this blog or these 15 blogs about this topic, or do I want to watch this 1 5-minute video? So a lot of people will click on the 1 5-minute video, which is me, and then they're like, wow, that made a lot of sense. This guy knows his stuff. Does he have anything else? And all of a sudden they're on my channel and they see the 200 videos. But it wasn't always like that. So in the beginning, the first 6 months to a year into it, we only had 12 to 25 videos up there, and it wasn't enough content, and we hadn't really mastered our formula yet, so it became very challenging to get people to trust the guy from the video with, you know, in our case, let's be honest, thousands of dollars for his service to help us grow our business. And so it was a little bit of a struggle and a challenge at that point, but obviously we overcame it, and it went from a here's the guy in the video to, hey, we're having a national conference or we're having a regional conference. We like your videos. Would you like to speak at our conference? And then they get me on the stage, and then I do what I do best, like I do in my videos, but it's not a 5-minute video. It's an hour, 90-minute session, and then standing ovation, and everybody runs up and wants to sign up for services and so on. So it was a process to figure out this side of the business, but now, you know, 3-4 years after we started the business, we're successful. We're doing things that I've never thought we'd be able to do, and we're doing very great, and you know, all by the grace of God. So that's, there you go. I hope I answered your question.
Well, there's so much there, man. You really packed a lot of great content in there. So let me just unpack that a little bit for everyone. I think number one, you know, we can all get to this place where life's a little hard, and you're starting something new. And for you, one of the ways that you put a lot of time and effort, and it wasn't always great, was doing YouTube. And I think for a lot of physicians out there, picking one form of social media is a great way to go to get to have people to know you, like you, and trust you, especially for those that want to start their own practice or have a private practice, or you're trying to get a productivity bonus. What a great way to grow your business. And it might not happen, perhaps, like Steve said, just instantaneous success, but then things start to steamroll over time where someone finds you. And one of those benefits you talked about with YouTube, it comes up in the searches. So if you're looking to get more patients, YouTube could be a great way that they could think of to do that with, right?
Yes. And you know what else I love about YouTube is it's free. It doesn't cost you anything to put it out there. Now you have to learn tag words and all the other stuff, and you can do some research on how to appropriately put your videos out there with what are the taglines or what are the points that people are going to search for that would help them to find you. You could even actually target your videos to show up in a certain geographic area. So if I'm a physician, for example, we actually work with a chiropractor here in town where we are, Manalapan, so he's a doctor of chiropractic. So if you're a doctor, you're a physician, you want to hit just your town or the couple of towns that you service, you can actually set it up so that your video will only show in people's searching for what it is that you do in your geographic area. So this way you're not getting somebody from Illinois reaching out to you when you're in Texas, or somebody in Seattle reaching out to you when you're in Los Angeles, for example.
That's great advice, man. Well, let me shift the question here a little bit. Now,
sure.
What you're doing today, you're focusing on this huge problem of nursing home care, and you're training folks across the country on how to solve this. Tell us more about that.
Yeah, it's amazing. Last year I had the privilege and honor to be part of a 7-state symposium. So basically we did this symposium 7 times in 7 different states, and we spoke to over 1,200 skilled nursing facility administrator, director of nursing, director of therapists, social workers, and so on. Anybody who had a license. Some of them were medical directors who were physicians themselves for the buildings. And there's this whole movement of accountable care, which everybody's aware of. And it's a shift of where it used to be, the more people you see, the more money you make. Now it's about the quality of the outcomes, and the better the outcomes. So, you know, let's face it, you were talking about productivity bonuses before. So if I have better outcomes, that means I'm seeing fewer people. So what's in it for me? So now there's this whole shift where the government, Medicare, which is a great payer source, which is let's face it, the majority of the population that we see over and over again are pretty much 65 plus. But even unless you have a specialty niche and so on and so forth, and so don't worry about that. But there's this whole movement where if you have better outcomes and your patients are healthier and stronger and they're not in the hospital, there's money that's going to be given to facility-based care. And the facility-based care is going to work, which is hospitals and rehab centers. They will work with the providers, i.e. physicians, home health, hospice, home care, all the other people who are in the community outside of the facility that helps them have the better outcomes. This is all leading to the ACO formulations and so on. So all of these things, they're all related to positive outcomes. So when I was speaking at these skilled nursing facilities and I was talking about the post-acute care providers that they're working with and who they're sending patients home with and what are their outcomes and what are their statistics and so on, what scared me, Dave, was their mouth hung open and it was like they had no idea. They weren't even thinking about who they were working with as to how that could help them grow their organization until I painted this picture. So it kind of frightened me a little bit, but I was glad I was able to speak because we're talking about 1,200 professionals. So this there was a good chunk of people I got to speak to. And so I'm very passionate about that from what I do with working with these post-acute care providers. And when they get in front of a skilled nursing facility, when they get into a hospital, when they sit down with a physician and they discuss working together, making sure that they have accurate statistics, making sure that they know the success of their outcomes, and then being able to educate these physicians, facilities, hospitals, et cetera, on how they can work together, because one hand truly does feed the other. If we're helping these patients remain home with dignity and grace and staying out of the hospitals, those are positive outcomes. And that positive outcome, that money will filter through from the hospital level all the way down to every other person out there. And so they are looking for the right people, and there are some huge opportunities. I mean, I had a lady in Phoenix, Arizona, who owns a home care agency, and this hospital, and this particular hospital, I don't know which one it was exactly, had a horrible congestive heart failure, CHF, readmission problem. National average of CHF readmission is around 22%, 23%. This particular hospital had around 27%. So it was a problem. This hospital is getting penalty after penalty after penalty. They're losing money. They're bleeding because of this. So my home care provider, who is one of my clients, we worked with her on calculating her stats. We worked with her on coming up with a plan to be able to handle CHF. She sat down with her director of nursing and came up with a solution to this problem. She started to find the best physicians in the area who dealt mostly with CHF to come as a combined solution, physician and private home care provider, to then go to this hospital and work out a program where she would be bringing those discharges to see that PCP, that primary care provider, within 7 days of a discharge. All of this stuff was all put together through, you know, this is what we did with her, but she put this together. She went and presented it to the hospital, and now this hospital actually put together a pilot program where they're going to be working with her and giving her all of her readmitted, all of their readmitted CHF patients to prove it over the next quarter of the year to see if it improves their results, which I already know the answer is going to be yes, because we know that if those patients can get to us as the physicians within a certain amount of time, if they're following that plan of care with the discharge like they're supposed to, taking their meds when they're supposed to, getting to their physician, proper diet, proper exercise, all the things that they're supposed to do, that will keep the person home safe and sound, which will make the hospital look good. So in everything that I just said, and you know, Dave, you're going to dissect it because I gave a ton of content there.
You did.
But
you did.
It's an interdisciplinary approach working together to have better outcomes, which makes the hospital look good, which makes the hospital want to work with us, and therefore that helps us to increase our patients. It increases dollars and cents in revenue and more opportunity for us to become part of ACOs and so on going forward.
So it really sounds like, Steve, if I could try and summarize what you said, that if I can, I'll try. But that essentially that this process today, Medicare is looking to say, and the government, Affordable Care Act, all of these programs are trying to say, hey, show us, physicians, that you are helping the patients, that you're making an impactful part of your business, and that you're not just ordering extra tests and ordering extra prescriptions, that there is some beneficial outcome. And what your experience has been is when nursing home care providers are working with physicians, that they're actually able to show that there is a better outcome when these two different businesses are collaborating, that there's a bigger pie for everyone to prosper on.
Yes, and I'm not sure if it's happened yet or if it's still in the talks, but I believe, and you can correct me if I'm wrong on this, the physicians themselves get a bonus when they see a patient within a certain period of a time of a hospitalization. Is that correct, or has that happened yet, or you're not sure either?
You know, I don't know the answer to that, but if any listener does, please let us know. That part of it I would love to know the answer to. So let Steve and I know if you could follow up on that question for us.
I'm pretty sure it either happened or it's going to happen, but if it's happened already, then there you go. Boom, proof in the pudding. That's it. We're talking extra dollars and cents from seeing a patient who was hospitalized within a certain period. I believe it's either 7 or 14 days. And if it hasn't happened, that is the plan to do that. And so, again, by working with these post-acute care providers, the home health, the hospice, the private duty, as part of, and then the skilled nursing facilities and the hospitals, when we know someone's getting discharged and we see that patient within 7 days, we get a bonus for seeing that person. That's part of the plan. That's part of the group bundle payments and everything else that's supposed to start coming together. It's all the dollars and cents at the end of the day. This is the role that the physicians play. We provide that. We get those patients in there. It will affect our bottom line directly.
Absolutely. I could totally see that. Well, and I got to imagine, I mean, physicians probably would like to collaborate with a good home care agency. So can you tell us, how do we know? How can a physician know what's a good agency, what's a bad agency, as they do some due diligence on this stuff?
Very good question, because in every market in the United States, there is a plethora of home health and the private duty. Now, the home health is a little bit easier to be able to determine who's good and who's not, because you can go right to Medicare.gov, and it's public information. This is why I love Medicare. It's all public. And you can actually go on Medicare.gov, and at the bottom left side of that homepage, there's something called Home Health Compare. And when you click on Home Health Compare, you just type in your zip code, and you can find every home health agency within a certain geographic area that you service, which I'm going to just go out on a limb here and say you're going to have at least 5 to 10 home health providers in your geographic service area, if not more. There are places like Houston, Texas, for example, where you'll do that search and you'll find 100 home health agencies within a 25-mile radius of your business. So it's crazy in certain states, but at least you're going to find 5. And as you go on there, you click on it, and you compare them, you can actually look at their rating. Medicare has the whole 5-star rating. You really want to be working with the home health companies that have a 4 or 5-star rating, maybe a 3-star rating, as that represents the average agency, and then 4 and 5 represent the best agencies. Because if they have that good of a rating, that means that they're not having service failures. They're having better outcomes, quality care statistics, and survey results. They're having an increased, and this is the real key with it, if they have better outcomes, what does that mean? It means they have an increased census, so they have more patients coming through on their services than the other ones do. And so therefore, by you partnering and working with them, signing off on those orders for people to be seen by these agencies that are better than others, or specific ones that are better at certain diagnosis groups than others. So if somebody's really good at CHF, you work with this home health. If somebody's really good at COPD, you work with that home health, for example. It's going to help to have better outcomes and so on and so forth. So that's the way you can find out for the home health, the skilled side of it.
All right. Well, let's take a pause here for a second and go to our commercial break. Well, if you are like most members of my audience, you are committed to being an amazing doctor and succeeding at life. But the truth is, you have never received financial training during medical school, and you struggle with enough time to do it all. And maybe you even made a few mistakes along the way. And that's exactly why I wrote my book, 10 Critical Mistakes Doctors Make With Their Money, and the brand new ebook, 5 Steps to Overcome Common Physician Financial Mistakes. As a matter of fact, you can't buy 5 Steps to Overcome, but you can get the entire ebook for free by subscribing to my free email newsletter at www.drfreedompodcast.com. My email newsletter lets you know once or twice a month whenever I posted fresh content to my podcast, so you don't always have to visit my podcast website. Plus, my newsletter subscribers, they get a first crack at exclusive offers and lots of free stuff. You can get the whole copy of 10 Critical Mistakes and your free copy of 5 Steps to Overcome Common Physician Financial Mistakes ebook by visiting drfreedompodcast.com and enter the form on the page.
For the private side, the people paying out of pocket for it, this is something a lot of physicians really don't usually get involved with, and it's becoming more apparent that private home care is the only way to really reduce the readmission rate. So years ago, when accountable care first came on the scene, the readmission rate was somewhere around 20%. It has dropped. It's closer to around 16% right now on a national figure. So they did good, 20% improvement over the last 3 or 4 years because of all the things that we're doing. But we're starting to notice that you can't get the numbers down below 15% unless you're bringing, again, an interdisciplinary approach to keeping that individual home. So how do you keep that person home? It's going to have to fall on the individual to pay for it out of pocket. You know, for just take a step back here for a second. All right? I'm kind of dancing around the question, but I want to give you the background so everybody understands it. When you look at from a government standpoint, I am Uncle Sam. I am the United States government, right? And so as the government, I am paying billions, hundreds of billions of dollars every year for Medicare for our seniors, all right? Because that's there, and it makes sense. The sickest people, the elderly are the most frail. They're the ones that use more health than any other population in our country. It's like 3-1, right? So when you look at that, I'm paying hundreds of billions of dollars to provide care for seniors. When I look at the success rate, the outcome on a national average, it is 84%, because 16% get readmitted, I said. So 84% of the people who are seniors who are on Medicare as a beneficiary go through the system and have a positive outcome. In my eyes, as the government, that is good enough, which is why I'm not going to put any more money into paying for this service, because those outcomes are good enough. So if you're going to improve on it and I'm going to give you more money, you have to find a way, healthcare system, on your own to have better outcomes. Does that make sense, Dave?
Yeah, I think I'm following you. Well, it sounds like one of the things that I got out of the conversation, you talked about going to the Medicare website and that the nursing home cares are ranked on a up to 5-star system. Is it 1 to 5 or 0 to 5?
1 to 5. So 1 and 2 are the bottom 40% in your area.
And so one of the things I was curious about, Steve, as you were talking about that, I think you had briefly mentioned some of the ways they measure that. Are Medicare, is there someone from the government going to these facilities? I think you talked about taking surveys. Where are they coming up with this ranking?
When these agencies get survey, actually, that's exactly what it is. So when the state comes in, every skilled nursing facility, every hospital, every home health, every hospice, any Medicare beneficiary has to get audited. And so the state comes in from the Board of Nursing of each individual state, and usually spend anywhere from 3 days to a week to sometimes 2 weeks, and they basically go through everything. They're looking at every file, making sure every T is crossed, every I is dotted, and then they come through and they look at those results. The other part of it is the Medicare footprint. So Medicare leaves leaves a footprint. If I'm a patient and I'm in, I go to the hospital right now today and I'm on Medicare, my Medicare footprint has started because the hospital is opening a claim that says I went to the hospital. So I come home on Friday in a couple of days and I get discharged. Now Medicare knows I was sent home because the hospital's claim closed on Friday, right? So now if I end up back in the hospital within 30 days and a new claim is open, Medicare, or in this case Uncle Sam, knows I went back to the hospital. That hospital gets penalty depending on what my diagnosis is when I came in. That's a readmission. So everything that I do, so the home health company that took care of me at home because I was discharged and I'm going on home health, that company, if I go back to the hospital within 30 days, Medicare knows that I was with a certain home care company because that claim, again, was open. So it followed me. That's how they track that five-star rating system. The agency with the fewest readmissions and the better outcomes are the ones that have the highest ratings.
Hmm. Interesting. Well, I know that today I talked to so many different docs, and they're really struggling with their outlook on their income. And as a matter of fact, many are drowning in literally hundreds of thousands of dollars in medical school debt on top of their mortgages, and their income is just flattening out, just like a pancake. And some physicians, they're really burned out today, and they're wondering if they can keep going on. Do you think, is there an opportunity in nursing home care for physicians? And if so, what would that look like?
Absolutely. And first off, Dave, I agree with you 1,000%. It's not what it used to be. And it's a, you know me, I'm a man of God, I'm a man of faith, but for lack of a better word, you know, it's a damn shame that physicians have to go through all the stuff that they have to go through. You know, I do feel that the government overregulates everything. I feel that they, you know, one rogue physician out of 180,000 or however many physicians there are in the country does something wrong, and all of a sudden it's like, well, that one person did it, so now nobody can do it. And it's like, wait a second, but you know, it's ass backwards. It really is. So I truly, genuinely feel for physicians because it's not what it used to be, and it doesn't have the prestige that it once has. Plus all the Google and everything, you can Google stuff, and then you know you have patients who come in and they got their degree from Google University, and they know more than you do. And so it's like you kind of got to play with that too. So I feel for physicians, believe me. How can you affect the bottom line? Definitely look into the accountable care and being part of these accountable care organizations that exist out there, getting that interdisciplinary approach and partnering up with the private home care companies, all right? This kind of is along the lines of what I was saying before. Find out about that physician bonus or the incentive that's given out there for seeing a patient post-hospitalization within a certain time, and making sure that as soon as you're aware one of your patients, or this is where you have to work with your private and your home health providers, because they're the ones who are aware. The home health provider knows immediately as soon as a patient's coming home. They know immediately who their primary care provider is. That's you. So if that home health company knows, because they're the one getting the discharge, when they bring that patient home, they need to make you aware right away that, hey, your patient's coming home. You need to see them within a certain amount of time so that you're part of it. Those little incentives will definitely help you along the way. It adds up. I have no idea what the reimbursement is or what it's planning on being, but look into that because that will help you with your bottom line right there. When you're working with your private providers, I know you had asked me before who's a good private provider, the ones who keep stats. Most private home care companies across the country, and there's thousands of them. There's franchises, there's corporations, and then there's independent mom and pops. I don't know. No one type is better than another. It's who the local provider that you have the relationship with, what are their statistics, what are they doing, where are they getting their clients from. If they're taking clients home straight from the hospital, straight from the rehab, which is the best place, same thing. As part of what the service they're providing, as the custodial care is what the term is, so they're providing help with activities of daily living, those good ADLs that I mentioned earlier, the Lou Gehrig's disease when I first got started, right? So, you know, they're providing help with that. Part of it is taking patients to and from physicians. So it's part of the requirement of the care that they're providing for these individuals. So when somebody comes home and they're coming on services, within the first day or so, they should be contacting you, scheduling an appointment for their caregiver to bring that patient, who's your patient as well, it's a mutual patient, to come and see you so that you can make sure you're getting your incentive. That's how you partner up with them, and that will help you with your bottom line, is by working with that interdisciplinary approach to keeping to providing better outcomes.
Absolutely. No, I totally see that. And, you know, Steve, I believe that in today's world that successful people learn from their mistakes. And our mentor that we've both worked with, Dave Van Hoos, says super successful people learn from others' mistakes. So what are two or three lessons that you'd like to pass on to physicians as we close this out over the next few minutes?
The first thing that I would say as a mistake that I had made or that I – yeah, it was a mistake that I made. Don't be afraid to invest in people. So when I first got started in the business, part of the reason why we grew fast. So here I am talking, you know, 3.5 years after we started this business, and here I am complaining that it's not where I want it to be. It's a blessing it is where it wants to be and everything else. We're doing great, so I'm not saying that. But I always wonder, had I hired Tony, the first person who came on, if I had found a way to dig deeper into my personal finances to bring him on sooner, full-time versus waiting almost a year after I started the business, where would we be today by having the extra manpower? And so you have to look at when you're hiring an office staff member, are they filling a role, and then what are they filling and freeing up for you to do so that you can focus on what you do best? Delegating responsibilities appropriately. That is a huge, huge thing, and your business will grow quicker because of it. The other thing that I would say, too, and this was, again, a mistake that we did, and I invested, just like you said, with Dave Van Hoos, I invested with that company to help me out, an organizational flow chart. I guarantee if you look within your practice and you look at your HR person and your billing person and your compliance officer and your nursing staff and your front desk people, all the people that work in your practice, there's a lot of duplication of efforts going on. Maybe it's worth the investment. I don't do this myself, so I'm not plugging myself. I'm just saying in general. Invest in a company that will come in and help you streamline your processes. You know, Dave and I were talking before we got on the podcast here. We're coming off our best, most profitable quarter ever. Well, in the fourth quarter of last year, I invested a lot of money in a company coming up, and they went through this whole organizational flow chart, and we found out that we had about 30%, 40% of what we were doing was being duplicated and too many hands in the cookie jar in certain parts of the business. And so as a result, we kind of siloed everybody into, you know, Nick does all media, Tony does all sales and marketing, Nicole does all operations, Steve, me, I do all of creating content and contract negotiations and everything. And as a result, a quarter later, we had our most profitable quarter, and this will be the worst quarter we have this entire year with all the things that are forecasted and what we're doing and how we're streamlining it. We're just growing and growing and growing. So it's always a good idea to invest in yourself and in your business. You are your best asset. Your business is your best asset. Invest in it and its future, and you'll grow and thrive accordingly.
I think those are such great lessons, Steve. And I think in today's world where some of these concerns that you've definitely addressed and gave some great meat for our listeners to chew on, as you look at things like social media and you pick one, Steve talked earlier in the conversation about YouTube. Whether that's YouTube or Facebook or Instagram, you know, thinking of these ways to connect with your patients, to get them to become raving fans rather than just another number, another person. I would encourage every physician to work on that. And this way you can really hit those productivity bonuses. You can grow your practice without being dependent on solely referrals from other physicians. So look into these things, the home health care that Steve mentioned and the Medicare website to help evaluate them. So Steve, just want to thank you so much for all this great info, this great resources that you brought today. And if you could, just real quick, let us know, what are some other books or blogs or podcasts you might recommend to the physicians out there that are listening right now?
best book that I could say about social media, because it's funny, you mentioned social media and Facebook and YouTube and everything. I actually do a presentation on Monday. I got to do a presentation in Chicago about social media as part of the thing I'm doing there. But the healthcare system, we're always 5 to 10 years behind the curve. So social media has been around for 5, 10 years, and now we're finally starting to think about it. We need to get out there. And there's a book called Why Now is the Time to Crush It, or you can just look at it. It's called Crush It, is the short title, Crush It, and it's by Gary Vaynerchuk. And basically, it was written 3 or 4 years ago, but that's fine. The content that's in there gives you a basic overview of the power of social media and how you can build your own social media platform, just like I did with Hurricane Marketing Enterprises, which is healthcare sales and marketing, just like Gary did with wines and vineyards. That was how he got started, but he used social media for it. So look past the fact that he's talking about wine and vineyards. Notice the fact that he's giving you concrete nuts and bolts on how to generate social media raving fans, as Dave just said. And when you have raving fans, that's people constantly endorsing you publicly on social media that you're the ENT or oncologist or neurologist of choice in the area and so on.
Awesome. Well, there's so much more, Steve. We could go on this for hours. Did you have any closing thoughts folks should be aware of?
Just step outside your comfort zone. You know, as I mentioned earlier, it's a shame what's happening with physicians today, and it really is. On the flip side, physicians now have to be business owners, and this is what it takes to be an entrepreneur. And as an entrepreneur, and Dave, you and I spoke about this earlier, we're always looking for the next thing and the best way to grow our business and grow our organization. Let's get some of that entrepreneurial spirit going and see how we can do this. Maybe work together, combine practices. You know, there's many different opportunities out there for growth. We have to think outside the box. It is the 21st century. What worked in the 20th century is not going to work nowadays. So we have to think outside the box, get that entrepreneurial spirit, care about our practice and growing it, and we'll find a way and we'll survive, and not only survive, we'll thrive in the next coming 5 to 10 years and beyond.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for being with us, Steve. If people have more questions, where can they find you? How can they get in contact with you?
Homecaremarketing.net is our website, our main website. And if you go to YouTube and just look up Steve the Hurricane, you'll find me. I have, like I said, hundreds of videos on YouTube now. You can get a taste for some of the things that I'm doing, and you can listen to what I'm saying and apply it to your business. You could also just model and see what I'm doing in the videos if you want to do your own videos and kind of use that as a basis. And if you want to email me, that's probably the best way to reach me. Just do info@homecaremarketing.net. info@homecaremarketing.net.
Awesome. Well, thanks again, Steve. It's been an honor, been a pleasure having you, my friend.
You got it, brother.
Well, if you are a physician or you're someone else servicing physicians, you want to tell your story, you're grappling with tough issues like these ones, get on the soapbox for a few minutes. I'd love to share it, too, in the next Freedom Formula for Physicians podcast. Make sure to email me, dave@daviddeniston.com, or on my website, drfreedompodcast.com. For the Freedom Formula for Physicians podcast, this is Dave Denniston. Thank you again so much for joining us. If you enjoyed this particular podcast, make sure to review it on iTunes because those reviews help us out so much. Make sure to subscribe. Check in again soon. Have a good one.
Hey, this is Dave Denniston. I hope you liked today's episode. I'd love to hear your feedback. If you did like it and you want some more ideas on achieving financial freedom, visit the podcast website at www.drfreedompodcast.com. That's www.drfreedompodcast.com. And when you subscribe to my newsletter, you'll get a free copy of my ultra popular ebook, 10 Critical Mistakes Doctors Make With Their Money. Go ahead and check out www.drfreedompodcast.com and snag a copy of your ebook now.